Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Quincy, you take care of our mutual friend with the tiny dog?
Yeah, we had a bit of a problem, T. He didn't have the scroll to pay for last week's haircut. He told Gino that you would front him the 75 boxes of ZD for it.
Motherfucker. This is the last time I'm putting up with this shit. Now you listen to me. You take Jeff, you bring him to Apple, and you make sure he goes down some stairs, if you know what I mean.
Ah, jeez, Tone. You want witnesses to this shit?
I'll get a stare at you, fucking stunard. I want you to take Jeff and make sure he falls down the stairs at the Apple store.
Don't worry about it. I'll get...
Oh, geez, there he is. I was talking to the guy at the Genius Bar.
Hi there, I'm just curious. Do these Apple Watch bands chafe your wrist?
Okay, really, keep it cool. Just walk right up behind him. Give him a little bump. And these IRS debts are gone.
See, whenever I play Papa Shot, my Fitbit always makes my wrist all red.
Oh boy, here I go. Just breathe. Just breathe. Oh no, I pissed myself. I can't do this.
Oh well, thanks anyway. Oh hey, what's this yellow puddle in front of the stairs?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 362, not 360 also. We should have done something for our 360 episode, shouldn't we?
I mean, it's not like, that's not really that important of a number.
It represents a full circle, which that should have been our Spiral review, if anything. That should have been the episode that we reviewed Spiral, or maybe the circle again.
I think reviewing Spiral would be enough celebration for the 360th episode.
it's our Xbox episode.
Yeah, don't get me down the path of nostalgia is really big now, and so now everything's like the 30th anniversary of things I liked. It's like the 30th anniversary of Mario 3 or whatever. I guess it's like special because it's old, but it like really doesn't mean anything. It's the 25th anniversary 5 years ago.
Yeah,
I don't know where I'm going with this other than the fact that I don't love numbers, like round numbers. people like to be like, oh, it's the 50th. I'm like, okay, this is the 49th one ago. One more is not that big of an increase.
It's just something about that fresh round number just does make it so much better.
It's a milestone. Folks, his wife loves him. fifth anniversary, not that. What is 5 years of marriage anyway? I'm just kidding.
That's bullshit.
I'm just kidding.
One thing that made me sad earlier was they did the Chicago Boys did like a draft of video game characters, and one of my coworkers he's a new guy for video games, MREGS, was the follow bar, so he didn't know what Gateway was, and that made me sad.
The computer, like he just was, yeah. He's too young to remember Gateway.
He's 24, so like it wouldn't have been out of reason, but still, like I understand why he didn't. But not knowing Gateway in that beautiful cow box. Mm. Do you remember?
Oh. No, I do. There was a in Indianapolis at Keystone at the Cross, and there was a Gateway store back in the late 90s, early 2000s, an entire retail store dedicated to Gateways. But yeah, I do understand that, because Gateway was definitely one of those things that disappeared in like a 2 year span. So yeah. You either catch the right side of it, or you catch the wrong side of it, and you have no idea what it is. But you're right; those boxes were nice, because like the computer itself was still like beige, you know, that shitty beige color, and you had to like differentiate yourself some way. And that was like Gateway. They got acquired by one of the computer companies.
Acer.
They get acquired by Acer. Was it Acer?
Yeah, in 2007.
No, but that's a long time after. I feel like.
I thought 2000 would be like the length, maybe like 2003. Yeah.
Well, I remember college, like nobody had a Gateway, like because you mm-hmm. cared about what people, like what computer they had in their dorm room. It was like kind of a cool thing. It's like, what do you have? Because I was the Mac asshole, and you know, everybody else, they had like, you know, some people had the big old like 2003 era laptops, the gigantic ones, and then some people had like the, you know, HPs or Compacts or whatever it was. But you never walked into someone's room to see them like blasting 50 Cent off of those like shitty $15 Gateway speakers, and they're like, this is my Gateway rig, y'all.
Absolutely peaking the shit out of those speakers. See, you were ahead of the zeitgeist though, because I didn't have a Mac in college, and I was definitely shunned for it. Like I had a Toshiba, and it was a great laptop, but like just when you bring that clonker out when someone else has like a MacBook Air, you just look like such an asshole. There's just nothing you can do about it.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, like I was building my own computers back in the day, and then I just got to a point where I kept like the computer would still work, but there was always something a little fucked up about each computer I would build. Like whether it be like it would randomly mm-hmm. shut down once every 40 hours, or just like wouldn't power on with the first button press, or like a you know, the USB ports at the front wouldn't work. I messed something up with the installation. I just got to a point where I was like, I'm just going to buy a Mac. I bought into the marketing mm-hmm. hype, the John Hodgman, Justin Long commercials, and they sucked me in. And I used a Mac up until like maybe 3 years ago, where I just can't do it anymore for the operating system. It feels too, it feels too Fisher pricey for me now. I'm sure some people do some incredible things on Mac, you know, run Photoshop and use the Automator or whatever they do, but it's not for me. I'd rather just get that PC.
I love that it's dumbed down for my dumb brain, but then again, I also have my PC, which has been giving me nothing but problems lately. I need to return that. So apparently Gateway in 2003, the SEC charged their executives for securities fraud, and they were found liable for inflating revenue.
Yeah, see, when you're an executive of a company, that's something you don't want to do.
Yeah, see, if I was them, I would simply have not done that, and then probably the Gateway would still be alive.
They would just they showed up in front of court and just wearing like cow print suits, and like, they'll get a kick out of this. It's on brand. They'll like it. Maybe they'll be a little lenient. I'm sure they're lenient. I'm sure they're lenient anyway. Probably get a year at Club Fed or whatever.
I didn't realize this, but I don't even know if I believe this reading this now, but they expanded into consumer electronics, including plasma TVs, digital cameras, DLP projectors, internet routers, MP3 players. I don't believe that at all. They made those?
No, there's no way they made it. They definitely licensed their name to
onto their shit. Okay. Yeah,
I mean, right. Maybe they made it, but I would see them just like, you know, licensing the Gateway name out to be put onto a projector, and the, you know, projector not being directly like OEM from them or whatever. Maybe they did. I don't know. I just remember all those accessories. It never worked back in the day. Nothing ever worked. Like a printer never really worked. Like things never really worked right. And that's why I went to Mac, because things actually did work when you plugged it into a Mac. But like I always feel like it's like a 33% chance of failure when like attaching to any. Did I ever tell you that like I used to I had like one of the first generations of like CD writers, the CDRs. It was like an external CDR with it was like a USB cable. CDs? Well, yeah. Well, I would rent PlayStation games. You could, if you had a mod chip in your PlayStation, so you could solder a chip onto the PlayStation. Let's say it's a motherboard. I don't know what it is, and it would bypass one. It would bypass the international restrictions, so you could play, you know, Japanese games or whatever, but also bypass the copyright protection. And so you could literally just go to Hollywood Video or Blockbuster and like hypothetically rent Madden 2000, burn Madden 2000 and have a copy of Madden 2000. And I think that was a big reason why Nintendo went with the discs for the GameCube. It's like, try to figure these so ones small. Out, fuckers. And then everyone else like went to like DVDs, and then DVD writers became a thing. But then by that point, like copyright protection, I think got a little bit harder. I'm sure people still did that, but it got harder to figure out. My like point of resistance was anything more than just going to the store and renting it and burning it. I wasn't going to do, but Hey, you're a video game publisher. I pay for them now. Okay. This is a statute of limitations. It's been 20 years.
I pay exorbitant prices for games that maybe will last me 20 hours of gameplay on easy difficulty. That's their fault, not mine. I'm finished with Resident Evil in 20 hours max, and like I'm like, oh, fuck these guys.
Now I'd almost feel guilty about not paying for a video game because they're so expensive to make. But like back in the day, if you wanted to like, you just like walked into the store and you're like, oh, Ridge Racer 2? Like, I don't care. Like, what did Namco spend on this? $15? Probably more than that. I'm just trying to justify it post hoc.
Spending a bunch of money on burning. Instead of spending a bunch of money, you just instead go to Blockbuster and rent, like, I'm trying to think of what PS1 game I own. Toy Story 2. I own the Toy Story 2 video game, which was sick. And burning that.
Yeah.
On PS1.
Have you ever heard about Xenogears?
No, what's that?
It's a Squaresoft RPG. It was, so the team that was originally supposed to make Final Fantasy, it was supposed to be Final Fantasy VII, and then Square looked at it. It was like too religious and too philosophical, and then they basically made it its own game. And it's celebrated as one of the best like PS1 RPGs of all time. And I would agree, except for the fact that it was a two disc game. And the first disc was all gameplay, and then they had to finish the game up. Like Squaresoft, the bosses in Japan said, you guys got to wrap the production of this up. So the second disc is basically an exposition dump in video game form. It's truly a sight to behold. It's all just like dialogue. And then they kind of like, there's things called like Xenosaga that I think like are spiritually related, but I don't know how much they're really connected. So I think the franchise is still kind of alive, but the original will live in my heart forever.
I could just never get around to any turn-based game that wasn't Civ. I don't know why. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And like some other ones, like it's not like, I don't know, turn-based isn't the right term, but like Pokemon, and when you're in a battle, like it is technically, it's not, is it, would you call that turn-based? You know what I mean? Where it's attack, defend.
It's turn-based, but they're like short fights, right? You know, you get into a Pokemon fight, there's a big difference than like a boss fight in Final Fantasy VI, where, you know, you maybe slug it out for 7 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. It's hard to explain it, because I feel like you are taking turns, because you're literally taking turns attacking and defending. You know, it's not like dynamic. So I guess it is, but at the same time, like it's not. So
yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's not like, obviously
someone's screaming at us right now.
No, there's like turn-based strategy games like Civ, where you do your turn and then the computer simulates the turn.
Yeah.
But then it's like the RPGs like are turn-based in the sense that you set your commands. And then the Final Fantasy series went into this like RTS system, which like tried to make it a little more dynamic, but essentially just put you on a timer. And if you didn't select it in time, you would get hit by the enemy. So they like progressed towards that. And then of course, like I actually think what they did with Final Fantasy VII Remake was probably the best combat system in a modern RPG, like in terms of bringing in elements from what old folks like me recognize from an RPG and like actually making it fun. Cause I could never go back and play Final Fantasy VII, the original. I just couldn't do that. I can't, it is boring. It is boring now in a modern combat context, those combat systems of yore.
I considered when I texted you guys while I was at that place at the mall, I was considering buying one of those old systems, like just buy a Sega, a Dreamcast, buy like a PS1 or whatever. And like, even if it's like $100, it'd be fun to have around. And I'm like, the more I think about it, I'm like, first of all, I don't even have like you need like red, white, and blue, the cable connector things, like optical cords and all that shit. I need connectors for that. This system already going to cost me like $140.
RCA cables. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. You get a Dreamcast, you had that S video on it. If you had a nice enough TV, that felt like a big leap forward.
Exactly. But then I need that. And then it's already going to cost more money than I would have ever paid for, or than I ever paid for one of those consoles. And then like every game, like all the good ones cost a shit ton of money, but then all the bad ones obviously cost like nothing. So it's like, that's the draw. It's like, I can go and buy like whatever, like Final Fantasy, like one of the bad Final Fantasy games or whatever, and it'll cost me like $4. But then any good PS1 game that's like well acclaimed is going to be crap. Same with like 64, like GoldenEye was there, and GoldenEye was, I think it was like $200. Like I'm not going to do that.
Well, I mean, have you read about the Smash 64 and Smash GameCube tournaments where there is a secondary market for old CRT TVs because the old games look good on CRTs and they look like shit on LCDs. And I don't know the science behind it, but so like if you ever look at like the Smash tournaments, and I haven't like read too much about it, but I did read the article about like how they like the old TVs, is like people just bring their like old CRT TVs, they lug them there, the old like 100-pound RCA dumps, plug it in, get the nice, you know, whatever.
Where like you could feel the static coming off of the TV. It feels like you're getting like just a dose of nuclear radiation if you get too close.
That's a feeling. I think that is one thing about old technology that I do miss, is the satisfaction of firing off, like turning on a CRTV. Yeah. So CRT,
like a tube TV,
CRT,
right?
Yeah, cathode ray tube TV, catheter ray tube, which just goes right in your penis. It's a really weird interface, and you press the button, and then you know the TV would like, it took a while for the light to come on or whatever. The TV had to warm up a little bit. It was kind of neat.
There's like such like a
shitty
weird
way.
Yeah, there was like nostalgic's not the right word, just like a charm to like the mechanical nature of the old TVs, right? Like versus like this such like this over sleek minimalist digital TV. I think there's just something to that mechanical one that I kind of miss, but not completely, because the picture is obviously so much better on like any TV we have.
Yeah, well, I'm also one of those idiots that marvels at the progression of technology like over the last 100 years. I mean, it is pretty amazing, like. You know, it's one hand, it's pretty amazing what humans have accomplished, and the other hand, it's pretty amazing what humans have fucked up. But like, I do think when you look at something like a TV you had 30 years ago versus a TV today, just in terms of like, you know, being able to lift a 50-inch TV with one hand and like it looking as good as it does compared to basically like a device that probably, if you like open it up, would feel like it belongs in some sort of steampunk universe. I think that's pretty cool. Now it's just like, it's like with hard drives too. Like 10 years ago, I know we still have like, you know, spinning disk hard drives, but like that used to be the default. Like literally it was just a plate spinning around and around in a computer.
Yep.
Just figure it out. Just make the data not spin around, engineers. And they did it.
And it worked. And it's amazing.
And now I can load up my video games in 15 seconds.
It is insane.
Immediately.
That's the crazy thing about PS5s that I'm sure you noticed too, is the one thing where like the graphics have not yet still like blown me away, obviously, because none of the games have really been maximized for that just yet. But like the speed in which I can boot up a game is incredible. Like it blows my brains out, considering how long you'd have to wait to get into an actual game on like any other console. Like PS5, I'm up and running in 2K in like maybe like 40 seconds max.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially, I just remember those like old PS2 load times.
Yeah.
It's like the Grand Theft Auto Vice City and the Grand Theft Auto San Andreas load times, where you'd just be looking at like 800 pictures repeating back and forth. And, you know, the load times still exist. Obviously, they've gotten a lot better. I told you guys I was going to stop playing video games. I did start playing Final Fantasy 14 online. The online, I'm only playing like an hour a night, but it is like, so like I did play World of Warcraft back in the day when it first came out. And that was like one of the big leaps in like what made me feel like the future, because everything was interconnected and everything was online.
MMORPG.
Yeah, I mean, the World of Warcraft is probably the best to ever do it. Like, obviously, I quit after a year, and I know they keep adding on to it, and they've got a gigantic player base installed. But Final Fantasy 14 is on free trial, and it was like right there on my screen, and I'm like, I like Final Fantasy. I'll log in, and you know, it's kind of fun. Like, it's definitely like a, you know, slave for badgers, and then bring me their blood, and then I'll give you 50 gil. Sort of deal. Like, I haven't like played enough to get into the high level, like do 50 raids to get the one legendary chest piece and then level up enough to do it again, but I don't think I'll get to that point. But that game, do you know much about that game? Like, that game came out in like 2010 and everyone hated it, and they basically developed a new game while the current game was active and then replaced Final Fantasy 14.
No, but maybe that should be the blueprint for Cyberpunk, I guess, right?
No, they should just punt on Cyberpunk completely.
Just dump it.
Yeah, they made so much money off of that already. They should be like, okay, we got our money. We're fully funded for Witcher 4, and we're not gonna screw this up. And that would be the best course forward. They should just fully give up on Cyberpunk at this point.
Completely punt. I would love that, actually.
Because, like, what's the downside for them? They lose credibility, but they've already lost all the credibility. It's too late. Nobody cares if they just gave up on Cyberpunk. Nobody would give a shit.
And there is a worst case scenario where they put it out again and it sucks again. So it is honestly more of a win-win for them to just dump it completely and be like, yeah, we fucked up. Back to the drawing board.
Yeah. I mean, people still got a full game. It was very broken, but they still delivered a full game. So, like, legally, you know, I'm sure they've tried to, I'm sure enterprising gamers have tried to class action it or whatever, but good luck getting through with that one. That's what I'd do.
Have fun with that. But we'll end video game talk and go into our first ad here. It's about a VPN, and it's not about Khajiit VPN. It's not about High Elf VPN. It's not about Imperial VPN. It's about Nord Skyrim? VPN. No, but it's Nord VPN. And VPNs, you know, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, that listen to this podcast have used them before. They obviously help you a lot if you ever want to look at content that's outside of your country's zone or whatever they call it. Like, if you want to stream, like, let's say, for example, like Peaky Blinders. I used used NordVPN to stream Peaky Blinders when it came out in the UK on Netflix before it came out here. They might be doing the same thing with this last season of Peaky Blinders that's coming out. So keep that in mind as well. NordVPN. They are awesome. You can avoid buffering and you can access content from 59 countries, all while protecting your data from cyber crime. You can access your content anywhere. Like I said before, you can get to Netflix and other streaming and just in different countries where different titles are available. And if you're abroad, you don't have to miss any content that's available in the United States and it's not available in the country you're in. Or if you're one of our listeners abroad and you want to listen to something that, you know, maybe is available in the US and not available in your territory, you can use NordVPN. They have over 5,400 servers in these 59 countries. Again, you can avoid the buffering. They have great speed thanks to Nord Links. They have no more bandwidth throttling and, you know, stream securely. Again, your data is going to be safe. It's great value. Only $3.96 a month on the 2-year plan, plus 1 month for free. You can encrypt online traffic with a click. You can protect your children's online privacy as well, which is obviously huge. And you can automatically block phishing websites. It's a total crazy good encryption. It's funny because it almost makes me feel like we're playing like Deus Ex, or what was that game? Deus Ex? Not Deus Ex.
Deus
Ex. I just remember because I watched the YouTube clips of him and he's just like, I'm not big in the books. And like lines.
I like Deus Ex though. That sounds like a Deus Bigelow, like ninth sequel.
I think it sounds like what do you call it? Anti-diarrheal medication. I take Deus Ex to get rid of. That's way better. Again, you can block mail or written websites. You can skip ads. You can.
We finish the ad. We'll need a riff on that.
Okay, we'll get into the ad. You can avoid botnet control. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee if it's not for you as well. If you go to nordvpn.com/LCB or use code LCB, you get 66% off a 2-year plan plus one additional month for free. That's nordvpn/LCB or use coupon code LCB at checkout to get 66% off a 2-year plan plus one additional month for free. Okay, more on Deus Ex.
No, but I feel like, you know how Pedialyte's rebranded to be like winkingly a hangover beverage as well. Yes. Deus Ex should just be like anti-diarrheal medication, but it should be marketed specifically like to take before you go out drinking, just to make sure you don't have to have diarrhea. Like that, yes. That should be the branding. It's like, bro, you got any Deus Ex on you?
So they almost do like a Dude Wipes type of like ad read for them. It's like, yeah, like we know you're about to go eat Taco Bell and drink like 20 very carb heavy beers. Like, take Deus Ex. It's gonna help you avoid getting diarrhea or what do you call it? Mudweiser shits the next day. Mudweiser, what a term.
Yeah, just the packaging is just like, it's just matte black packaging with a very like robotic looking Deus Ex font.
Yeah,
is just a
all lowercase
bezel or bevel or whatever pops out.
Yes, it's embossed and beveled.
Yes, embossed. That's it. I think you got something here. You just gotta walk into Walgreens and be like, yo, which aisle is the Deus Ex on?
We have to do that. We actually might have to make that. That could easily be something Barstool sells. Our first ever medication sold by Barstool is Deus Ex. All right, first item of news up. Amazon bought MGM for $8.5 billion, which is huge. Obviously, MGM owns a crap ton of different properties in the movie world. James Bond, Rocky. They have Handmaid's Tale. They have Survivor, The Voice. They have Fargo, Shark Tank, Real Housewives, a bunch of other stuff. But it's obviously a huge deal. MGM's been around forever. I mean, that's big for Amazon.
I think there's like two levels of commentary on it. I think there's like the business commentary and then the personal commentary. And I think it's easy to say, like the personal commentary is just like, it's like any of these other consolidations where I think long-term is generally bad. And I know we fanboy out over a lot of stuff on here, but I personally don't like three companies owning 90% of IP. But at the same time, like that's just kind of the way it is. That's just how it is now, right? Like, and we've known it's been going that way for a while because it has been that way for a while. But then from the business side of things, like they got to put some juice on Amazon Prime. Like, and there's some good stuff on there, but I think HBO Max has like really come through, and the breadth of the HBO Max like lineup, I think, has like put a new standard on what people expect from a streaming site. Because I've even talked to like people who are very, you know, they don't talk on a movie podcast, but they have said like, oh, I don't feel like anything's on Netflix anymore ever since I got HBO Max. So I know this is like very anecdotal, but I guess it makes sense for them. Like, they got to invest in Prime and the streaming, and they got to have content on there and keep doing the originals. And I mean, the James Bond like kind of makes sense in and of itself. I mean, it is another service you have to go to watch these things. It's going to be there. I don't really think there's like much to say about it other than like, is the $8.5 billion a lot? Yeah, I think that's a lot of money for it, right? Because,
yeah.
How much did Disney pay for Marvel? Wasn't it like $4 billion? And I think Marvel at that point obviously wasn't the same Marvel we talk about today. Like, they got a great deal on it, but they kind of have already, like, they've built the value themselves for, like, a lot of the, Marvel Cinematic Universe. It wasn't like Star Wars in that ballpark, too?
Star Wars was definitely around $4 billion as well, Lucasfilm, I believe. Bought by they both were about, I want to say, around $4 billion each, and like those are two behemoths, especially just in obviously the entertainment world, not even just the IP world, but and money wise and like MGM obviously has a lot of great name brands, and you just on the list that I had before, like those are a lot of money makers. So I mean, it's good for Prime. I'll say I'll only slightly disagree in that I think Prime has had some really good stuff. Not just like Invincible and The Boys and stuff that like more recent to memory, like Sneaky Pete, I thought was awesome. Fleabag, 000, Patriot. Like, they do make good originals. I feel like, I don't know why, but like it's been harder for them their originals to like click and just like kind of like get into the mainstream conversation in the same way of something like Mayor of Easttown has for HBO and HBO Max. Like, I don't know what it is. And I don't think it's an ease of access thing necessarily. But like, I really do feel like they have really good originals. They just haven't really seemed to get captured or picked up.
Yeah. And yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, especially, I mean, like what's their biggest show? It's probably pretty obvious. It's not The Boys, is it? Like, it's, would it be The Boys?
Let's see, Prime Originals by viewership. I actually don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be something like dumb that's like right in our face and very easy to figure out. But let's see. The top five viewership. What do you think it would be? Because I think it would probably be something maybe not even like English speaking, maybe. Good Girls Revolt. I don't even know what that is.
I think the obvious one would be either Jack Ryan or The Boys.
Man in the High Castle is probably up there too.
But then, of course, like, you know, Invincible, like we love that. Like, it's just, you know, you got to keep going. Like, I mean, more than anything, it's like, you know, it's like one, it's access to the library, but two, it's like also the future rights, right? It's an all encompassing deal. And so,
A lot of these are good too. Like Marvelous Miss Maisel's on this list too. The Expanse is awesome. Bosch was pretty damn good. Man, it's like a lot of like actually pretty damn good things. And Hunters was like, that was a bogus ending, but like that was a pretty decent show for the first few episodes.
Yeah. I mean, but I think it's like anything else, right? Like there's going to be continued consolidation until like three or four services are still standing.
Own everything.
And I don't know what that's going to look like, obviously, but like I'd have to say like Apple's got enough cash to like pretty much weather anything. And then obviously like Amazon does too. And I mean, HBO Max and like all those companies are prime, but like, I think like when you look back at like paying $8.5 billion, it's a lot of money, but like, what are you going to do? Like the whole point of the game now is just to buy stuff and own the content and own the rights. And then, you know, I wouldn't be totally shocked if they did something with like the next James Bond where they had some sort of like prime premiere that was outside. I mean, maybe not the same time as the movie come out, but like I could see them like playing something in a movie for 2 weeks and then just putting it on Prime.
Like, yeah,
changed.
They went out of their way to point out too that James Bond was not going to be going to streaming immediately. Like that the acquisition was not going to affect its theatrical run at all.
Yeah, and I don't know about like immediately, but I do think like they're gonna want to drive people there. And James Bond, I think, is Rocky as well, but like James Bond's kind of the crown jewel. Like that's the one that's getting all the headlines in that whole portfolio. Yeah, and, you know, maybe they'll also do something where it's like some sort of James Bond spinoff. Although, like, I don't think James Bond is like prime for spinoff as much as like other IPs are, just because I don't think people would give a shit about a James Bond spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Like people, the whole James Bond is based upon having one Bond at one time. And by the way, also, like, how about this? How about the next James Bond is Pierce Brosnan again?
Yeah, bring him back like like one of those old Batman Thomas Wayne things almost.
Because he was like, I was looking at some, he was hanging out with somebody the other day. Like, I was like doing like one of the gossip sites or like just the Hollywood news site, and like Pierce Brosnan probably has aged the best out of like any actor I can think of from like who I grew up with. Like Pierce Brosnan, like has that like older guy. I mean, you want to say like Silver Fox?
Silver Fox.
That's so cliche, but he looks.
It's true.
He looks fit still, and I mean, I just think bring back an older Bond. That'd be kind of neat. But going back to the whole deal, it's like. Yeah, who really knows like where it ends up? The only thing I really care about at this point is like I am begging somebody to buy Konami just so they can make another Metal Gear Solid and a Castlevania game. Because I've been watching the Castlevania Netflix show.
Dude, it's great.
I'm like, yeah, the latest season, like, it's still pretty good. Like, but I would say like the show lost a little. It lost a lot when Dracula died. That was kind of like this whole big point of Castlevania, right, is Dracula, but it still has been very good. The writing's really excellent, but the main thing that series has done is it's just like, I don't feel like we've gotten like a mainline Castlevania game with modern technology that is like as expansive and as cool as like in my mind the way it could be. So I'm like begging, in the same way Microsoft bought Bethesda, like Konami, just sell those two IPs to Microsoft. And I don't know if Microsoft will do a good job, but it's like more than we're getting right now, and I'll take that chance. I'm just going to weave video game talk into everything on this.
How much you want to bet that they'll eventually make some sort of, like, not Avengers style, but compilation James Bond movie where Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig all get together in a Bond? There's probably another living Bond I'm blanking on right now, but just like, I could see it happening. That's what I mean by it. I could see him definitely doing that.
That would be, I mean, because Timothy Dalton, like, the thing, his whole James Bond thing was like, he's not that old, right? He's 75.
Like, no, and he's like very funny. I think he's charming. Just saying, I think I could do it.
I don't know. That feels like that intertwines, that puts too many holes in the whole concept of James Bond, and that breaks my brain.
They inherited to the title of 007, so I mean, anything's possible. Next item up, the trailer for The Last Night in Soho, full trailer. This is the movie, obviously, from Edgar Wright, the guy. It's funny, I was just talking about Timothy Dalton. He was in a Hot Fuzz, directed by Edgar Wright. This stars Thomas and McKenzie and Anya Taylor-Joy, Matt Smith, Diana Rigg, many others, including Terrence Stamp, our good boy from Phantom Menace. It's about Eloise, a young woman with a passion for fashion designs and a strange sixth sense, who mysteriously finds herself transported back in time to 1966 London with the body of her idol, a singer named Sandy. While in Sandy's body, she enters a romantic relationship, but the city is not as it appears to be, as the past and the present seem to fall apart with shady and horrifying consequences. I think it looks awesome. It has two of the best young actresses in the entire game right now, and Thomas and McKenzie and Anya Taylor-Joy. They're both fantastic. I love the way, like, Edgar Wright is so great just at, I think, making, just putting together movies in like his own vision, both from like a musical standpoint and from a visual standpoint, because this trailer was so vibrant and so colorful, and like it set the stage for like that late 60s feel so well, and like the music sounded cool, whatever that remix track was that they had on it, and just I really, really liked it. I'm super, super pumped to watch this movie.
You know, and we talked a lot about what was the movie and the filmmaker we said didn't miss, but then missed with the last movie we reviewed?
Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah. I forget, like, really easy to remember names now. I'm kind of worried. I think that he doesn't miss Crown now is solely on Edgar Wright. Because Edgar Wright doesn't miss. I would say,
casting-wise, yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, but like the Shaun of the Dead and then the Hot Fuzz and like that whole
Cornetto trilogy,
like obviously that's on a different level, and I think like part of that is just like I think part of that just goes back to the cast on that, right? Especially like when you look at like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and like what they did there. But like, even like, I thought Ant-Man was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And then obviously Scott Pilgrim versus the World was it's still pretty fresh when you watch it. There's some like very obvious things that feel like it's from 2010, but I like, it is stylized in such a way that it's very enjoyable. And like the cast is incredible in that. And I just, in Baby Driver, maybe like, I think when people think back to Baby Driver, some people like,
they
really
think of
like
one thing.
It. Yeah, that's right. They think of the baby driving the car, man. Babies can't drive cars.
Crazy.
Stop driving the car, baby. What are you doing? And when I think, like, I don't know how well Baby Driver's necessarily age, just because I haven't watched it, but I remember liking that. So like Edgar Wright's one of those things where it's kind of like built in when you watch this. And it's like, it's hard not to get overhyped for it just because of his track record. Like, maybe it'll be like a solid 85, right? Like, I don't think this is going to be like the best movie I've ever seen, but like everything lines up with like it being good. There's really no reason. This is probably a bad way to talk about movies in advance, but you know what? Like, you see trailers and get excited for it. That's the point of the trailer. I'm not going to be dishonest with you about that.
Yeah, I mean, Edgar Wright's on the screenplay as well. He co-wrote it with Christy Wilson-Cairns, who did 1917, which was awesome, but I don't think not necessarily something where like an insanely pack-a-punch script, maybe, but at the same time, still written extremely well. I don't know, man. I agree with you in that it's, I don't want to do the same thing with Those Who Wish Me Dead, where I'm just going to overhype this picture in my head. But I would definitely say, like, yeah, I agree with you in the probably the doesn't miss type category, because he's never made like a bad movie, and he's been involved in so many great ones. Like, not even just like the Cornetto trilogy, which is obviously amazing, and many other movies like Scott Pilgrim, I think, Misunderstood, Baby Driver, had issues with, but still a really good movie. And he's also like executive produced on great stuff like Attack the Block. Like you were saying, he wrote Ant-Man. He's done so many great things. And again, just one of the great vibe directors. You know what I mean? Like, he's so great at setting a vibe in a movie, like almost as good as almost any other director I've seen. And he's just, all of his movies, I feel like, have been, to an extent, more than anything else, very entertaining. He knows how to entertain people.
Do you know he was in Death Stranding? I'm going to talk about video games every
No, was Saturday. He really?
Yeah. Kojima just put all of his, I don't know if there's friends, but obviously like people Kojima likes into the game. And Conan O'Brien's the big one. But
yeah.
This, Anya Taylor-Joy. I mean, and obviously, like, probably is, it has to be one of the bigger names out right now, just in terms of like expectations. So I think that, like, I think everything's lining up for this to be very entertaining. Again, I said, I hate hyping something up so much, but it's like, it's hard not to, like, that's, it's kind of the fun of like watching movies, right? Like, we're not like professional critics. I do feel like I'm allowed to like be like, this looks really neat.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with being excited for a movie. Folks, that's why we do the pod.
That's what,
to suck on some
also
movies.
I feel like Matt Smith isn't in a whole lot of stuff, but I feel like he's in a lot more stuff than it feels like he's in a lot more stuff than he actually is in. I think part of it was just his Crown stuff.
Yeah.
He was in like 30 episodes of The Crown. We got a lot of Matt Smith in The Crown, but like in terms of movies, you know, he had three movies in 2018. He was Robert Mapplethorpe in Mapplethorpe. I didn't see that one.
He's a guy, I think, an actor anyway, with like a good batting average. Like everything I see him in, he's always usually good. The Project, maybe not so much, but like I've always liked him. He's got a very distinct face about him.
And the man, the legend himself, Terrence Stamp, who doesn't love a stamp banger?
Exactly. Chancellor Valorum, right?
He should do more television, I think, Terrence Stamp.
He'd be great on like HBO specials. Like imagine him, and not maybe Mayor of Easttown, but like if he had like a beard, he'd fit right into Mayor. But like one of those,
I think he had an appearance in the Piss Shark Material show. I think that was an HBO show, right? But that's not like a traditional, like what you're thinking about, like HBO prestige show.
Yes.
Like I would love to see him in a prestige show, because he hasn't done television a lot. Wouldn't surprise me if he just one of those old school guys who's like, for, you know, just
television sucks.
Yeah, in the area he came up in, is like you're either like a top of the pack film actor or you're a television actor, and he probably gets a bunch of like television offers. HBO is probably like, just like, come on, please, like just be in the show. And he's like, I will not. I don't know what accent that was, but that was not English.
He's looking at all the other British actors like doing crazy great stuff at HBO, and he's like, RIP to you, but I'm different. I'm a film actor.
You ever look back like pictures of like Terrence Stamp and like Michael Caine, like, you know, living actors right now who are obviously like, you know, in their 70s or in their 80s, and you see old pictures of them from the 60s and you just forget how like attractive they were. But they look so cool. Like Michael Caine looks so cool in those old photos where he's just got the big glasses and like wearing the ascot or whatever. Terrence Stamp's kind of the same way. I don't have anything else to add. This is a segment where I admire the British actors with their heyday in the 60s.
Dude, we love our good British actors, especially ones that like, there's a lot of those like British actors where I could point them out. And like they've only been in like two things in my entire life that like have been made a major thing to me. Like a guy like that, Michael Gambon, to me, like that's a dude like I will always recognize his face and his voice no matter what, because he played, you know, the second version of Dumbledore. But also like I'll see him in Layer Cake or something like that, and I'm just like, that's Michael Gambon. That's such a useless chunk of information that'll live in my brain forever.
Is this Diana Rigg's last role?
That I don't know.
It probably has to be. It's posthumous. Is that how I say it?
Posthumous?
I can never say that word, man.
That's a tough one. I'll give it to you. But I think it's posthumous.
I just recently figured out how to say what's the word for something that's like a single name or like named after somebody? So like if it starts with his namesake? EP. It's like upon. See, I don't know how to say that.
Eponymous. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like I just get.
That's how it looks in my brain. I don't know if that's actually how it's pronounced.
I don't know. Like, it's probably not how you say it, but I can write those words out. I know what they mean. I don't watch shows that say that.
Exactly. That's what it comes down to. I've never heard another human being, fictional or not, say it. You know what I mean? Like, I've never seen another person say that word. So it's going to live in my brain in that exact fashion.
They said it on Throwing Fits the other day. And I was like, I know that word. I'm glad somebody's saying it. And I listened to it. And then I'm like, now I know how to say it. And then I forgot how to say it.
Stupid. Let's go to another good movie trailer, Gunpowder Milkshake. The trailer dropped for that. It looked awesome. This is about a sisterhood of female assassins. Over the course of a single night, they fight to stop a cycle of violence while coming to the aid of a mother-daughter assassin duo. Stars Karen Gillan, stars Chloe Coleman, Lena Headey, Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, Paul Giamatti, tons and tons of people. It's a great cast. The trailer looked cool. I mean, I'm down with any sort of like not mindless, but like an action movie that attempts to build its own world of anything like that. Like, I'm cool with that. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's no skin off my bones. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think to some extent, it's like the perfect Netflix movie, because this is definitely a movie I'd want to see in theaters. Like, you can compare it to something. Like, I'm going to always compare everything to Six Underground, because that's like, that's like the flagship Netflix movie in my mind, where it's like, I would watch it on Netflix, but I would never pay to actually see this. I would pay to see this, like, just because I think the cast is more compelling than Six Underground. And that's, again, bad comparison, but like, Karen Gillan obviously rocks, like Lena Headey, Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, like you said. And then of course, like, the good boy, Paul Giamatti's in it. But like, more than anything, it looks sweet. Right. Like, I don't know like what, like the response for this was. Like, I'm sure, like, did it get any like John Wick comparisons? Was it like Wickian? Can we define it as Wickian, or it seemed different enough to not be like, I think it's kind of lazy. Like, in my mind, I'm like, it's Wickian. Well, no, it's a fucking action movie. Like, you can't just say
anytime
it's
anything
Wickian.
Has like a society of assassins. Now they just say it's John Wick. Like, John Wick was not the movie that invented that. But no. Like, now, because John Wick is the one that perfected it and like excelled so well at it, now everything is now going to be like compared to that immediately.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Assassins were created by Ubisoft with the Assassin's Creed franchise.
Yes, of course.
But Assassin's Creed was based off of the 1995 Antonio Banderas movie, Assassin's.
There's a movie with the GIF, with the amazing GIF of him nodding at the computer.
It was him
and Stallone. And who was the female lead in that? Because that was the whole thing, was like, she was going back and forth between them, if I remember correctly, right?
It was, let me pull it up. 1995 film, Julian Moore.
Oh, okay. Moore. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I love that movie. That and Desperado. Like,
yeah.
Antonio Banderas could not miss in my mind when I was 11 years old.
Then he became the sexiest vampire in, what do you call it? Interview with a Vampire.
That was before Assassins, though. Interview with the Vampire.
That was before Assassins?
Yeah, Interview with the Vampire.
I thought that was like 96, 97.
No, Interview with the Vampire was 94. So, oh, wow. like Antonio Banderas, like, after, I mean, it was like, maybe all these movies had to be in production during Interview with the Vampire, but like, he was in six movies in 1995.
Damn.
He was in Desperado and Assassins in 1995. And then Desperado was obviously a part of the Robert Rodriguez trilogy, the El Mariachi one. But that Desperado was my favorite.
That one was great. What was the one with Clooney where he was the vampires? Was it Dusk Till Dawn?
From Dusk Till Dawn. Like... Yeah.
Yeah. Was Banderas in that, or am I making that up? I think I'm making that up.
I think you're making that up. That was Tarantino. There's like three movies Tarantino that can... was in that.
Okay. Yeah, there's a bunch of movies that just like blend in my mind from I think just the setting standpoint. It's I think it's the Johnny Depp movie, which I believe is just called The Mexican, right? And it was that, Desperado, and From Dusk Till Dawn. Despite all three of them being very different movies, in my head they're like the same. It's almost like, I don't know if you saw the Team Smokin' Dozen match, but like I confused Syriana and The Kingdom, because in my mind, when I see the posters, I'm like, oh, these two are in the same area. Like that's just where that they're the same movie. So like my broken brain just associates them too much with each other.
Yeah. No, From Dusk Till Dawn is a great movie. It's not actually a great movie, but it's a great movie because that was that period where George Clooney was still the ER guy. Like George Clooney had yet to ascend to full Clooneydom. I don't think he did that.
He was the sexy ER guy.
Yeah, he was a sexy doctor from ER who rescued the kid from the crash in the drainage pipe or whatever. That was his big episode. It was something like that. And he won the Emmy for it. And then he ascended to be the George Clooney. But like before you can ascend to be the George Clooney, you gotta, you know, you gotta act with Quentin Tarantino in a movie about like a vampire brothel.
Mm-hmm. And it worked out for him. We're going to go on to the next news, but before we do that, going to get into another ad. This is for Porter Road. They are incredible. They sent me a big ass package, and I believe probably Jeff as well. It's a big ass package of meats, like all like freeze dried in this container. And I'll tell you what, they were absolutely awesome. You can skip all of the meat on the foam trays at the grocery store and enjoy craft meat without leaving your house. Porter Road has you covered, from weeknight staples to weekend cooking projects and everything in between. They're an online butcher shop that basically they just deliver all this high quality meat to you. I think they gave us some Italian sausage links which I had yesterday, New York strip, which was incredible. Really, really good pork chops. Like I sous vide them. Tell you what, sous vide is a cheat code. Have you tried it yet?
I've never sous vide anything myself, but I have had sous vide. It's good. I'm just not a, like I said, like, I mean, if we go back to my whole like protein cooking complex, I think sous vide probably is the best way for me to comfortably cook proteins in my house. I haven't gotten to the point where like, there's a disconnect between like, I know the food was sous vide, but it's something about putting it in the bag myself and seeing it floating in the pack or whatever.
It doesn't like float. It sinks. You vacuum seal it, man.
Well, you know what I mean? It's just like the mental image of like my food's in a bag, even though the food was in shrink wrap. Now it's in a bag. I don't know. Like, I don't want to see it. So I have no problem. This is like, I'm just digging myself in a bigger hole with like my whole like cooking meat at home thing. Cause like people are listening to this and it's like, what the fuck is this guy's problem?
I'm telling you got to do it. But again, they gave me some pork chops that I sous vide. They're absolutely incredible. It's made by chefs, or it's from chefs and butchers, Chris and James. They started Porter Road 10 years ago in this local local Nashville butcher shop with a mission to fix the broken food system. And for 10 years, they've tweaked and tuned their process to bring you an exceptional piece of meat, all while building a more sustainable system for farmers and the planet. They work with trusted local farmers to ensure animals are raised the right way, humanely on a pasture with no hormones and antibiotics. Maybe that's why it tastes so good. And from there, Porter Road dry ages all of their beef and hand cuts each steak in each chop using old world butchery techniques that produce the cuts that you won't find in the grocery store. Shop like you would at a butcher, you would at a local butcher, and order items a la carte, or you could choose from a curated subscription bundle, and it always ships free. There's no commitment, and you can customize your frequency. Plus, steaks and chops arrive fresh and they're never frozen. That is something I noticed. They were in like the cool, it was in like one of those like cool bags or cool packs, whatever you call it. Like nothing was frozen. Everything was like just, it was like, what do you call it? Just cold. Cause it was in like that cold box or whatever you call it. But it was awesome.
That sounds good, man. I feel like when I cook a steak, I like the reverse sear method where like 20 minutes on the skillet each side and then 70 minutes in the microwave.
Oh yeah. No, I do that all the time. Yeah. you just put it. No, first you have to put it into a, what do you call it? An airtight sealed, container so that it explodes while it's in there.
I have one of those extra large hot pocket reflector sleeves that I keep for all my
reusable.
I just slide it into that and pop in the microwave. It's done in a brisk 70 minutes.
Again, Porter Road is awesome, and right now they're offering you $20 off of your first order of $100 or more if you go to porterroad.com/lights. Go to porterroad/lights for $20 off your first order of $100 or more. Again, that's porterroad.com PORTERROAD.com/lights. And all right, the next news item up, Timothy Chalamet is going to play Willy Wonka in Wonka, which is a Willy Wonka prequel movie. I'm intrigued by this. Initially, when they first just read the headline, like, yeah, he's going to play Wonka, it's going to be a prequel, I forgot that the guy who did Paddington was going to be in charge of this. And I thought that this was just a new thing that they're announcing that was separate from the Taika Waititi, because he's making two series for Netflix about Willy Wonka. I thought like this is just another thing they're adding on, but this is already in development. I just completely, it blown over my mind. And I'm more intrigued by this because number one, Paddington is so, it's not like the same, it's not in the same like lane as Wonka, but like it has that same sort of Britishy charm to it that Willy Wonka has. And that to me excites me only because I think that he could probably do this right. Not in the same way that, and not like in the same sort of weirdness way that Taika Waititi is going to be doing his two series. And Timothée Chalamet is just, he's just a great actor. And I think he can do basically anything he sets his mind to. But I am intrigued to see how he handles comedy in this sense, although maybe it won't be in that same sense. I don't know.
Yeah, the first thing your mind goes to is that like the 2005 Willy Wonka, where it's like Willy Wonka but like darker, you know, like more it's that like the sensibility where it's like we're doing a dark, like very like somewhat evil remake. And I think you got some of that in that movie with like the origin story of Willy Wonka and his dad being a dentist. And the first thing that goes in your mind is they're going to do that. They're going to make it darker. It's going to be a darker Willy Wonka. And I think it could be okay as long as they stay away from that. Like if they actually make it like charming and like maybe heartfelt and like, and look, I know the Gene Wilder one, like there were elements of that that wasn't like fucking sunshine and rainbows. So like, I get that, but you immediately are just kind of like, this feels like the critic gag or something like that. I'm kind of dating myself with that. I mean, this feels like a Family Guy cutaway almost, where it's like, oh, Hollywood's got some new ideas. It's a Willy Wonka origin story. But at the same time, like stranger things have happened. They could end up like enjoying this. And so I don't want to shit on it too much, even though I do kind of find the concept ridiculous.
And again, it is like you're saying, like, I don't want to hedge too much and say like, it's going to be amazing because I definitely had reservations just about another Wonka project because now we're going to have three competing against each other. And it's going to be so hard to just sort of replicate the same magic because Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka, like Gene Wilder is Willy Wonka in my head. And there's Johnny Depp is not even like an afterthought in that respect. And it's just, well, I don't see how they recapture that.
Well, part of the draw with that, and I don't know how much like Roald Dahl has written about Willy Wonka's pre-Chocolate Factory life. Like maybe there is Willy Wonka official canon out there. But like if you haven't read those books and you're just watching the Gene Wilder movie, like part of what you like about the character is you don't know anything about this freak man. Like you don't know, like, why is he living here? Like, why is he in this chocolate factory? Like, who are these Oompa Loompas? Like, what's he doing? What's his deal? And the whole question of like, what's his deal? Is part of the intrigue to the character itself. And it's almost like when you find out more about the character, the less a shit you actually give about it. But it's also been like 40 years since that movie. So they're not going to take anything away from that in the same way the 2005 movie ended up not taking really anything away from that by doing this. It's just the way things is. You got an IP people recognize, you got to utilize it, and they're doing it here. But I don't really care what Willy Wonka's origin story is, because like nothing is as better as just like imagining like a 45-year-old dude being like generated in a chocolate factory and running it without any origin story, which is my headcanon for Willy Wonka. He just woke up one day. He just woke up one day, like got out of like an embryo sack, a fully formed 45-year-old man,
like a yurikai
with like falsely implanted memories that like compelled him to run this chocolate factory, and that was his deal.
Yeah, and see, that's what they tried to do with the Johnny Depp one. Remember, like the Christopher Lee dentist as his dad, like a little subplot thing. It's like we don't need that. Like just having Willy Wonka exist as he is in his own little bubble is kind of part of that charm. And just I think maybe the best thing that they can do is to not try to live up to the Gene Wilder Willy Wonka and just try to do in a sense, their own thing and like something that's a value add. You know what I mean? Not necessarily a replication of Gene Wilder.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I am looking forward to, though, is at least they're doing musical numbers. Like, I don't know how you could do this and not do musical numbers, because that's just part of the built-in expectation. Like, I'm glad they're just not stripping that out. So it will be fun to watch Chalamet tackle singing, or however they decide to do it. And like new musical numbers, I think that could be pretty entertaining. So I don't want to write it off completely, but it's like Wonka is one of those characters that it's like the less you know about Wonka, the better. Like, I don't want to know about this guy. I don't want to know where he came from. I don't want to know why he's making this candy. The thing I hated the most about the 2005 movie was the origin story of how the Oompa Loompas came to work at his factory, which like has aged very, very poorly.
Deep Roy, yeah.
And I just like that takes away from like, you know, I know there's like stuff there he says in the original movie, but just like seeing it's kind of different. Anyway, good luck to Timothy Chalamet. He's got his plate full. Good for him. Hottest working actor. One of the hottest working actors. I'm going to hype up every person we talk about today. Hottest working actor in showbiz, folks. Timothy Chalamet. Set to appear in Dune and then in Wonka.
Yeah.
What is it? Does it to be Wonka, though? That seems like a cliche. It's just like, Wonka.
Well, yeah, that's like Cruella. You know what I mean? They have to do that in order to show it's different. You know how like they whenever like they say like there's like a serial killer's childhood, they're like, yeah, you see, he killed animals. That's what you could tell. Like Wonka in high school would offer a kid like a bean, and if he took it, he'd just give him a wedgie. Like he just had like Wonka tendencies.
He just bit into a Tootsie Roll. Just didn't even lick it. Just bit into it and discarded the candy shell and just ate the Tootsie Roll part of it.
He cracked all of the candy shell off the M&M and left it there like it was a peanut shell and ate the chocolate innards.
He did. He broke off the Toblerone with his teeth and not his fingers. It just had like some real fucked up candy backstory.
Oh, just imagining that like while it's poking the roof of your mouth. Still. Next up, this dropped on Monday, the trailer for it's a teaser trailer for the Eternals. They didn't really give away anything. They just kind of just showed you here's almost all of our cast members. Here's their uniforms, if you want to call it that. And here's like their setting and cinematography, whatever you want to call it. I didn't like this teaser trailer that much only because I think the music choice was odd. Like their rendition and their remake of it was just not very good. And like, I know that you basically have to do that in almost any trailer now, but like, I didn't like their version. And I think it sounded very corny. We didn't get too much of a look at any specific character, which again, it's a teaser trailer. That's like kind of the point. And it didn't feel like there was anything from this at all. Like I didn't get anything from this teaser trailer, like really at all, other than that it looked good. Like the visually, it looked like pretty damn good, but that's basically it. And we're going to be traveling through time. That's a little preview.
It was a vibes trailer. It was a mood board.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine for a teaser trailer. In fact, like even for a regular trailer, I much prefer that. I mean, maybe it's not as satisfactory as you're expecting, but it is still not the regular trailer. But even if you went to the regular trailer, I'd rather them give me less about the movie, so there is that air of intrigue around it. But the big takeaway from this trailer is they have the big shot at the end where they're all stanced up like Lucky Luciano. Mm-hmm. And they're all very, very, they're stanced up in a very awkward way. It was almost like when video game characters glitch and they're just in like their default pose, and it's not the T pose, but it's like a default pose. It felt like that. They had their like arms out. It was kind of weird, but I like the music. What song was that?
You liked it? I didn't like it, man. I thought it was, I don't know what it is about it. Maybe the way it blended into like the orchestral part of it. I didn't like it. I just hope something different in the actual trailer.
It was just vibes. Just vibes, man.
It didn't look good. Everyone, there's not a single, I kind of wish like that movie needs an ugly person. Everyone in that movie is so damn hot. Like, you know what I mean? I was just watching, like, fuck, it's making me feel bad about myself. Everyone in it is so fucking attractive.
Yeah, I should be in that movie. I should be the ugly Eternal, where they're like, oh, go talk to
Kevin. What, he's like the ugly duckling of the Eternals?
He has the worst powers, too.
Yeah, he's like the toxic Avenger.
Like the
can't
other guy
fly, can't do anything.
The other guys can, like, generate,
life and water and all that stuff. And like, the only thing I can do is like cook meat with my hands.
And you can't do more than one piece at a time.
Yeah. Just like put one raw chicken breast on my hand and it's the perfectly cooked chicken breast. And like, it takes me 15 minutes though.
Yeah, no, you can only cook like, you could do like a 10 minute hot dog.
My superpower is like, I can guess how many gallons of pee anyone has in their body at any given time.
Like, yeah, we gotta bring along Trill the Eternal. That actually sounds like a cool name, Trill the Eternal.
Trill the Eternal. The only use is like when, like the only job you can get with that superpower is like when like Olympic wrestlers or boxers are trying to cut weight to be like, where am I at? And I'm like, well, you got approximately 0.7 pounds of pee in your body right now.
Give or take.
God damn, thanks, this guy's the worst Eternal. This guy's the worst Eternal.
And you're like, no problem, citizen. You can't even fly away. You drive away in your Volkswagen Golf back to base.
Yeah, I have like a Mark III Golf, Mark III GTI.
This episode is brought to you by 3Chi. 3Chi, we've talked about them a bunch. They're awesome. They're the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products. All of their products are formulated by a biochemist and made in the USA with USA grown hemp. Their Delta 8 is a federally legal version of THC that is a functional alternative to marijuana. Remember, it's not like CBD. It's literally Delta 8 THC. It's going to give you that body like buzz and feel to it that you'd kind of get from a THC product. But like, THC products will give you all that anxiety, which this doesn't have. It's awesome. Try their edibles before, like those we've talked about them before, but they make these Rice Krispie ones that are so good, brownie that's awesome, all of the gummies are amazing, they have like the tinctures, all those things, it's amazing. It's available online at 3chi.com, that's the number 3chi.com, and it retails around the country. You must be 21 to purchase, and remember, again, this is not CBD, it's psychoactive, it's going to give you that buzz. So go to 3chi.com, 3chi.com, get Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Use code CAMERA at checkout. You get 5% off of your order. This shit rocks. We've been talking about them forever at this point. You guys know the deal. And it's awesome. It's one of those products that I really, truly do love and believe in. And I'm glad that they're been with us for this long. Thanks to the boys 3Chi. But now, we're going to talk about a little movie called Spiral, which I was lucky enough to go watch in a movie theater. If you've been following me on Twitter, I made that chain of every movie I've been watching over the, like, I'm trying to do one a week at AMC. Actually, I shouldn't say AMC. Fuck them. They're not sponsoring us. I've been going to watch a movie every week, basically. And this was my weekly allotment, was to go watch Spiral. And it was fucking disappointing. But we'll talk about it a little bit first. Spiral stars Chris Rock, Max Minghella, Marisol Nichols, Samuel L. Jackson. It's directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, who I'm not sure how to pronounce it, I'm sorry. They were behind some of the previous Saw movies before, so they're veteran in this case. Let me get the old synopsis pulled up here. Working in the shadow of his father, Detective Ezekiel Zeke Banks and his rookie partner take charge of an investigation into grisly murders that are eerily reminiscent of the city's gruesome past. Unwittingly entrapped in deepening mystery, Zeke finds himself at the center of the killer's morbid game. This movie, Trill, you know what? You started off. Start off with your quick thoughts and your score, and then we'll delve a little bit deeper into it.
Let's have a little back and forth about this movie today. Okay. Even though I think we're going to be on the same page. I give this movie a 35. It's not a good movie. What do you give it?
I gave it a 47, and I agree with you. I think the one way to describe this movie is that it's, well, number one, not good. It's also just extremely inconsistent, very cliche, and just very almost hollow. That's the kind of thing that's disappointing, because like a lot of those other ones, you go into them expecting them to be hollow cash grabs, come out of Halloween, whatever. This one, I mean, delays or not, it's coming out in the summer. You're expecting, and it's got like Chris Rock in it, it's got a bigger production budget. You're expecting it to be different, and it's not. That was just a big bummer. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and the origin of the movie, I believe, what we talked about before, was Chris Rock had an idea for a horror movie, and then he went to Lionsgate, and then Lionsgate was like, we'll do that, but it's going to be a Saw movie. And I don't think Chris Rock wrote it, but I do think like it was his pitch. And I I don't think it was a very satisfying horror movie or a very satisfying Saw movie. And there were parts that, like, I liked some of the traps. Like, there were parts that kind of felt like the classic Saw of yore. The major complaint about the traps I had in this one is, like, I feel like with Jigsaw, there was some element of survivability with the traps that lended to some of the tension you got with those scenes. Whereas this one was just like, all the people in the traps died in this movie.
And there's no, you never thought at any point they were going to make the sacrifice to get out alive. After the first one, especially.
Yeah. And that, like, I mean, you know, you could maybe say, like, okay, well, that's the difference between Jigsaw and the Emerson killer, the spiral killer, whatever you want to call him, is that, like, you know, Jigsaw obviously was calculated and, you know, it was a game, right? That was the whole thing. It's like, you want to play a game.
Yeah.
And with a game, you either win or you lose. And the meaning is, like, you escape with one arm or you die in the context of Saw. And with this one, it was, you know, the, because it just felt like the characters in the traps were destined to die. It didn't have the tension that you had from the traps from some of the original Saw movies. And keep in mind, like, I haven't seen all of the Saw movies. I just remember the feelings I got from watching the first few Saw movies. But when you go outside the whole Saw lore, like, and you take the Saw element out of it, I think, like, you have a movie that is, it's a very weak plot. Like, you know, you have that whole, like, detective, like, overworked cop motif, and everybody's sweaty because it's a heat wave and all this stuff. But I didn't think Chris Rock did a good job in this one. I thought there were times where I really enjoyed Chris Rock in this one. Like, I liked the comedic elements that almost felt like part of, like, something he would write, like the Forrest Gump thing at the start, and then the dialogue he had with Max Minghella's character in the car. And, like, that was funny and, you know, fine. But, like, when you got into the later parts of the movie and you kind of just got to the scenes where he was, like, trying to piece it together, it didn't have like a lot of weight to it. And I don't, like, necessarily want to put it all on Chris Rock, because I did think he was good. I just it was maybe, like, I don't know, like, it's hard to explain.
He was just miscast. That wasn't the role for him. If he pitched it, that's fine, take an EP or something, but, like, maybe just hand the role off to someone else, right?
Yeah. And look, I mean, I just like Chris Rock, and I think he does have the range to do this. And I just think there are scenes, like, I don't know if he just never really got a scene. Like, I did kind of like the end, and, like, the, you know, when his dad, you know, got killed, and kind of, like, the real, like, horrifying elements of that. Like, I thought he did a good job there, but I think there were parts of the movie where, like, the acting just wasn't very entertaining, and it almost felt like something you just watch on, like, a procedural TV show. Which, like, you know, maybe if, like, Chris, this was Chris Rock's idea, like, I almost feel like, did you watch the Fargo? Was he in
the last season of Fargo? Yeah, I watched the first few episodes. I haven't finished it yet. But again, that was also, he was, I don't want to say the problem with the first few episodes, but, like, he's just not convinced. Like, I'm not scared or intimidated by Chris Rock. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily, like, I think what Chris Rock has going for him is, like, I do think he has a good way of being, like, an expressive and relatable character, you know, both in the comedic role and then also, like, in some dramatic roles. There wasn't a whole lot of, like, emotional heft for me in this movie, and maybe that's unfair to expect from the Saw franchise. But at the same time, it's like his dad, like, went missing and then was, you know, set up to be put in this trap. And then even when you got into the realization, I think really what it came from is there was no emotional heft because you knew who the killer was 10 minutes into the movie.
Yep.
It's the rookie. We got a rookie police officer here played by Max Minghella. That's him. He's the killer.
Yep.
That's 100%. That's immediately where my brain went to. And then what sealed the deal for me is he dies off screen. Like, when we saw that box, like, if he dies off screen, he's 100% the killer. So, like, by the time you get to this big, like, quote unquote twist at the end, like, I may backtrack a little and say it's, like, not on
Chris Rock completely, because I was already taken out of that point, because there's no gut to punch me in. Like I was mm-hmm. fully braced for that to happen.
Yeah. Let's try and like break this down as comprehensively as possible, because I feel like we're all over the place now. So I think it's better than all the Saw movies that came after the original Saw movie. And so, I mean, relatively speaking, it's still not as bad as some of those, but still not great. And a lot of that just has to do with the production values and with some of the people involved. But at the same time, I think we, just to go on the bad, because I'll harp off what you were talking about. What I don't think I liked was the general cop story, because that inclusion and a lot of it, including the heat wave and just the color palette and a lot of what they were using, it made it feel a lot to me like a Seven ripoff, including, you know, walking in and dropping off the packages and all that shit. A lot of the stuff that happened in this movie is something that I feel like I've seen before. And all of those movies, like stuff like Seven and other more cop-like and department-related dramas and thrillers and suspenseful movies, they all have an extremely compelling bad guy. And Max Minghella is a guy where I remember when we were watching this movie, we were like just texting about it. You said he's the most swagless villain ever, and I think that's the best way to describe him. He just has absolutely zero charisma added to this role, and just it was so easy to telegraph, like you were saying. And for me, it wasn't even necessarily right when he walked in on screen. Like that was like, yeah, like I think he's a little sketchy when he shows up on screen. But when he asked to take away Chris Rock's phone and walked away, I'm like, okay, he's the bad guy. Like clearly this is the bad guy. And that was maybe the 30-minute mark of this movie. So right then the movie's already like, I know what's going to happen, and I'm fully, like you were saying before, expecting it the entire time. And that to me, especially considering this is a Saw movie, this is is part of a franchise that like it prides itself on suspense and reveals, that is a huge problem for this movie. And I mean, the acting issues, like you're talking about before, Chris Rock, I don't think was suited for this role at all, but I don't think the problems were isolated to him either. I don't think anyone gave a particularly strong performance. The actress who played the police chief was pretty bad. All the other cops were really nothing. They didn't add anything to this movie, and just no one stood out. And I will say, I respect the hell out of Sam Jackson just showing up and getting the bag for doing like maybe a day of shooting max. There was no way he was on set for more than what do you think, like maybe a week maximum?
A week would be pretty generous. It may have been a couple of days over the course of a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah. Just
because he was in a few different set pieces, especially with the end. But
he was in
like,
he was on the rig, and he was on the one scene where he's in his own apartment, and those are the two scenes he was in, and they build him as the second most important actor in this whole fucking movie.
Well, I don't blame him for doing that. Samuel Jackson, like, what more can be said? Like, you want to watch him.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you're right. It was like the setting was, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a fine line between, I guess, like, and I don't know where the line is, because it's like one thing to say we've seen the setting before, but like that's okay for a lot of different movies, because like either they're tropes or they're homages or like whatever you want to call them. Like, it seeing stuff again, like, you know, having a sweaty like crime noir type vibe to it or detective vibe to it, like you see in Seven, isn't necessarily a bad thing as long as the rest of the movie's strong. And it tried to set that sort of vibe, but it didn't really add any like grittiness to the movie itself, or like any compelling grittiness to the movie itself. And so, like, I mean, that going back to my comment, it just really felt like something you'd watch on TV. Like, if you strip the Saw elements out of it, like it just felt like a procedural.
Like an episode of Law and Order, almost, the way that they would like they paced it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you got all the, you know, you got like, I mean, the biggest complaint, like, and I talked about the Saw traps, but like some of them, like the finger one, like the electrocution, and then
the wax.
Well, the wax was the one I liked the least, because I felt like that scene was like a minute. I don't feel like there was any tension to that.
There's no torture. She was done.
Well, the tension came from her, like, you know, going around the building, but then like she, you know, she got on the table and it's like, you know, this blade will sever your spine, and then they dumped hot wax on her, and that, like, that was it. Which, like, I mean, it's fine. Like, I mean, draw the fine line between being too gruesome or not, but like I do feel like the Saw franchise is like one of those things where they can get away with that, because that is some like of the expectation, is that you're gonna get these just evil scenarios.
But yeah, I
almost kind of like the traps, because the one thing that I do almost want from Saw is to be like, have that feeling where like I really am just being really grossed out and I don't want to look, but I'm being compelled to look because I want to see it. And like that element of the traps, I think worked, like especially the finger one that grossed me the fuck out. The like glass, even the wax one too.
The glass one, yeah. I thought was the best. Like that was kind of the most, to me, the most brutal. And I mean, obviously it was, I think was in the end of the movie for a reason, but like the wax one specifically didn't, I don't know. It didn't have like that level. I mean, even when you take out the fact that you kind of knew the character was done for, it just didn't have that level of like drawn out, like horrifying despair that you come to expect from like a Saw trap. And the best thing I think I can say about this movie is the 21 Savage song is really nice.
Yes. The one in the beginning with during the heist, that was awesome.
Yeah, like he released a 4-track EP on it, and like him rapping over the spiral theme. Like that's, I like that a lot. And I think that's the best thing that came out of this movie.
Yeah, just there was a lot of, I think, other issues too, like dialogue wise, just because like almost the one thing I was excited about this was that they were really going out into the world in a Saw sense, because they're usually so confined into a singular space. And like maybe like the one thing you could do to jumpstart this is to really, you know, infuse this into a different genre, and this being almost like the cop drama part of it, like that could have been really cool. And that was something that kind of excited me about this is, you know, you got a big name actor in Chris Rock. Sure. I mean, even from the start, I didn't know if he was necessarily right for this kind of role. And you have another big name in Samuel L. Jackson. And you also have like, you know, you're going out, like I was saying, going out into the world, you have these bigger production budgets than you usually get, because these are horror movies that are typically built to, like, you know, you dump them out around Halloween and you make like quadruple your budget back, probably way more than that actually, and like that's it, but just keep making money off teens. But like this one looked like it had the opportunity to be something different, and it really wasn't. It was the same. It felt like everything in it is something I had seen before. Like, you know, they do the, oh, cop that hates his wife, like fucking bullshit, cop that's on his own bullshit, you know, I'm going to go argue with my police chief bullshit. Like all of this is something that is not fresh. Nothing about this movie was fresh. It all felt retread on previous ground. And again, that all might've been saved if either you had a compelling protagonist, which Chris Rock really wasn't in this, or a compelling antagonist, which Max Minghella definitely wasn't. He was like, I was trying to think of a better word to describe him as this killer, but swagless really is the best, because like he's like revealing the plot and I'm like, you suck, you are the worst. And like he just sounds like, I don't know how else to put it.
Did he do the spiral voice, like the killer voice, you think?
I hope not.
Here, I did an impression of it earlier, and I'm going to listen to my impression real quick. No, it was too stupid. So wait, I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to go on mute real quick. then I'm going to listen to it and then try to get that back, because the voice was kind of creepy, but then in my head, I'm like, he sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
I'm going to listen to it.
It was interesting. It was an interesting choice just having him do it, because again, just very swagless. And when he's revealing the plot of like his sinister plot, he almost sounds like he's nervous to admit it. It's like, yeah, you know, we killed a bunch of cops. This guy, he's a corrupt cop, killed him. It's like, you're supposed to be like, hello, this big bad.
Today is the day we play the game to find out if your tongue is separated from your body or not. Like, and so it wasn't creepy. Like it was just, it was weird and off-putting, which I think maybe can be creepy in its own right. But the problem is you go back to like the Jigsaw voice, and like that is like creepy. But yeah, like I almost feel like, you know, if you got like an actor with a little more swag, like to replace Max Minghella, like to just like come into the role and just like, maybe like bring an element of creepiness, like someone who's maybe been like on a Netflix show that is like kind of creepy.
The guy from You, throw him in there.
Yeah, throw him in there. Or I was even thinking a Skylar Gisondo.
of course you were.
Hello, would you like to get Gisondo'd today?
Can you imagine if it was Skylar Gisondo and he showed up? He's like, oh, gee, did I do that? Did I kill all those people? Oh, boy, I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
Fucking Urkel now.
Well, Emerson kind of also does the Darth Vader come work with me thing at the end, right?
Yeah.
And like that would have been kind of a compelling twist if Chris Rock was like, okay, you know what? If you let my father like live, I'll work for you. We'll work together.
Yeah.
At least you said it. I mean, I don't know if a sequel would get made, and I don't think it would have made the movie any better. But like, I wouldn't have seen that coming. And pretty much everything else was paint by the numbers.
Yeah, that would have been cool. When he said yes, I thought for a second, but the more I just thought about the movie on a whole, I'm like there's just no chance it's happening. And they did a lot of just crap that is just stuck. Like they did the typical Saw, like the weird shaky cam reversal thing. You know what I mean? Like when he'd be like standing in the car and it'd be like, do like a really fucking jittery shake. They had all of that jump scare crap, which like is again just become so cliche to crappy horror movies. Just there was so much of this that or so much hype, not necessarily even hype. I just expected this to be different because of everything, all the other elements put into this movie compared to the other Saw sequels. But it just is just crap. It is just a crap movie. Again, some elements of it I think were pretty decent. Again, I like the traps, and that's why you go to Saw to watch the traps kill people basically, and I think almost all of the traps are pretty cool, and maybe they lack the same tension because you the whole time you feel basically knew that they were gonna die, but at the same time I thought they were gory and nasty, and like even with the wax one when he like peels it off of her face, I thought that was gross as shit.
Yeah, that was no it actually was pretty gross. I don't know, like I don't know if the trailer, like I don't know why I thought this, and it's probably stupid that I thought this, but I was like, is this going to be like a True Detective like take on Saw? Mm-hmm. Like maybe a little like I thought it was maybe like when I first saw the teasers for it, I thought they were maybe like going to go more like supernatural route. Like, mm-hmm. which, you know, if you're not going to bring back like the Jigsaw Killer, which I do think they should do. Like I think if they're looking to continue the franchise, they should just reboot it entirely and do the same thing over again, but just different. And like go a little supernatural on it. It would be weird to get into some like, you know, weird cult shit with Saw or whatever.
Jigsaw v The Conjuring or something, like Annabelle versus Jigsaw.
Yeah, but I mean, but that's like the puppets. But that's why like True Detective was kind of compelling, because you always like in the back of your mind, you always wondered if it was like this, you know, weird cult shit. It was, but like it just was like it. I think it towed that line between like the supernatural and not. I mean, actually being rooted in reality pretty well, but like letting your mind kind of run with it. And I wouldn't say it was going to be the level of season one True Detective, but I did think that maybe they were going to get a little bit weirder with it. They didn't, and to their defense, like, you know, they made a Saw movie. To be fair, this is a Saw movie. Like, it has the hallmarks of a Saw movie. It's just not, it's not compelling, and it's not different enough to really make you excited about the franchise again, which,
yeah,
you know, maybe they don't need that. Like, maybe they make another Saw in 2 years, and like in the post-COVID world, there people, you know, will come back to theaters, they'll make $125 million again, who knows.
Yeah, I guess the big question after this is just, is Saw basically dead? Like, was it lightning in a bottle just from that one? I don't mean like as if they're not going to make Saw movies anymore, but like, is the franchise as dead as in they can't rejuvenate it? Because like, was that just lightning in a bottle? You know what I mean? Because that first Saw was so good. And I think that part of what I loved so much about that original Saw was that it was so confined, and everything just unlike this movie just felt so fresh and felt like it was new, and that like I didn't know what was going to happen, and I don't know if they can recapture that same magic again, for at least for this franchise.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like the thing about Saw is like it definitely has dropped off like just a little bit, and all, I mean, I'll look at the box office results of them, but like the first movie worldwide was 103, and then it went to like 150, then 165 on the third, then 140 on the fourth, and down to 113. And then Saw 6, you did 68. And then Saw,
I'm sure 3D, they weren't spending more than like what, like 20 million per?
Oh, it was 10 million per. I mean, these were solid. Yeah. 10, the first one was only one million.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Yeah. And then Saw 3D was like 140, and then Jigsaw was 101. So, like, I mean, you say like it's still like, you know,
nine digits on that's still very, very significant. But you got to look at, like, by the time he got around to Saw 6, and I think that one came out in 2009, like, I think there was a little bit of drop. And then Saw 3D was like 140, but I think that both rode the higher ticket prices from 3D and like the actual interest from 3D. So, I mean, I do think, like, worldwide, like, actually, like, the United States numbers, like, show, like, a pretty interesting picture too. If you look at, like, Saw 6, it was like 70 million worldwide, but it was only 28 million for the United States.
US, yeah.
I mean, it's still making a shit ton of money. Like, obviously, we're not in the peak of Saw interest anymore, and I don't think we have been for 15 years. And I think that's okay. So I think maybe what you're saying a little bit is, like, yeah, I don't think it's the Saw movie will ever get back there to the way, like, Saw 3 and the original, you know, three movies, or the first movie and the two sequels, was just like almost like flirting with $150 million. But I mean, they still could probably do another one in a couple of years and make $100 million worldwide off of it pretty easily. The IP's there, the name's there, it's got an attached viewer base. People are going to want to see this shit, myself included.
See, I don't even mean it from a money standpoint. I just mean from a quality standpoint. Like, I don't see how they make a Saw movie that has the impact of, like, do you remember when the guy, like, gets up and walks out of the room in the first Saw movie, like, that oh shit moment? I don't see them replicating, like, that level of quality, and, like, the cutting off of the guy's hand with the fucking, or the foot, right, with the saw. Like, I don't see them ever being able to capture that same magic again, because, not that it's been diluted, but I feel like they just don't have, like, the ability to be able to capture that lightning in a bottle again.
Maybe you bring Lee Wannell back.
Why not?
He wrote the original ones. And, like, you know, maybe you can get that, but again, like, that, like, you're always chasing that high, right? Like, that's the moment everyone remembers. Like, you're always chasing that feeling. And I do agree that it was lightning in the bottle, in sense of, like, that's the thing about the Saw franchise that, like, I think if you reviewed, you know, I think if you interviewed, like, 100 people who have all seen the Saw movies and asked them, like, what the biggest oh shit moment is, like, a lot of them would probably say that one, because that was what hooked them. So, who knows? I mean, I do think they're at the point where, like, if you want to do something different, like, I don't think this was necessarily it. I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, maybe you don't need an answer when you know you can still make $100 million off of this, and that might be okay.
Exactly. They don't need to. If that's kind of the thing that sucks about these horror franchises, is, like, as an actual fan of the movies, like, it sucks, but also it's just part of the money machine, and the money that goes to a lot of those studios from, like, a crappy Saw movie like this, or like a crappy whatever Insidious or something like that. Like, those, that money gets end up using, sometimes being funneled by a studio and being used to make something better. So sometimes that's fun. That's almost like when I tweeted about the video games that used to come out for every single movie. Like, I had a guy that used to be a video game developer tweet me back, and he's like, yeah, as a video game developer, we used to love making these because we'd have to put, like, almost no effort into them, and then we could use the money that we would reap off them and use them towards projects we actually like. So yeah. I guess it's, like, in a sense, like, it's
just reskin something that's already been done.
Exactly. So it works in a sense, I guess, for a studio. But yeah, that's all I gave. Would you give it a 35?
Yeah, I gave it a 35.
After talking about it more, I was originally in, like, 45. I think I'm gonna go down to, I'm happy with a 40 for Saw, because the more I talk about it, the more I dislike it. But again, I think that's, it's still, I think I probably have Saw 2 maybe a little bit lower, a little bit higher, if I had to guess. I'll double check on movierankings.net. But again, just it's far from perfect, still pretty shitty movie. I wouldn't recommend going to watch it unless you're, like, a diehard Saw fan, and even then there's not really a ton of connective tissue between this and the other Saw movies, for that's worth.
The thing I like about Saw 3, though, is the 3 kind of looks like the W, so it almost looks like Saw with two W's. Like, yeah, you know, some it's like a new metal band from 2000.
It's a brilliant move.
All right, we're about to go do the next segment, but my internet's about to fucking get destroyed. Again, don't know why. It seems to pick the most opportune times to just shit out on me, like, between this and the last time we did the dozen with Titus. But yeah, we're gonna dump on it. And I think, you know what? Let's just wait until we're back next episode. Next episode, we're going to be reviewing Quiet Place Part 2, a movie that I saw in March of 2020. And we finally get to revisit now since the embargo's done. And we'll get to air the interview with Jaimin Hansu, if that even is saved anywhere, which I don't think it is.
Oh, yeah, the only thing that's good for my ego these days is when he says a six-year-old photo of myself is handsome. So that's nice.
But he's, in his words, he said very handsome, which is...
Oh, good.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. Hopefully,
I'm sure he wasn't just being polite.
We shoved the picture of a man in his face and just said, "Like, you are a model. Tell us this man is sexy." And he's like, "Yeah," and he agreed. And again, we'll be back. We'll be back with the next episode. Make sure you go watch Quiet Place Part 2. Certified, I think it's like 94% right now on Rotten Tomatoes. Some people saying it's better than the original. So that's a horror movie that you will enjoy. That much I'll tell you as someone that saw it a fucking year ago. But again, I'm Ken Jack. It's Trope Ballins.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.